It's the Scotty Myers Show.
Hey, welcome to this week's edition of the show. Hopefully you're having a great week so far. Of course, I'm your host, Scotty Myers. Thanks for taking some time to hang out and have some fun. Of course, we got geek news coming up a little bit later on. What do we got in geek news? Oh, we got a release date for a massive DC Comics film, and a Marvel movie has changed release dates. So we'll get into that in a little bit. Start off this week, my wife has had this thing going where she wants me to make meal plans for the week. You know, it's like, okay, you're going to go do the grocery shopping and you're going to make a menu for the week. It's not a terrible idea, but my God, do I feel pressure doing it? Like, I really, you know, like, I'm a guy that is pretty basic when it comes to food. I can eat chicken and salad every day of the week and I'm totally fine. Some would say this is not a healthy thing, but I really look to get zero enjoyment out of food. Like, I'm not looking for, like, you know, that bite where you're just sitting there in almost orgasmic ecstasy because of the bite of food you took. I'm more just like, it's fuel I need to eat to keep myself alive. So just give me the basics. You know, give me the basics and I'm good. And then I can keep moving. And that's not to say I don't like things the way things taste. I do, but it's just not my primary concern. So when I'm trying to put together a meal plan for somebody else, it's super hard. Super, super hard. And also because, you know, that means I have to cook this stuff. And it's not like I'm Guy Fieri or something like that. I really don't know what the fuck I'm doing in the kitchen. There are times I still don't turn the oven on correctly. Like, I freely admit that. I hit the wrong button to turn on the oven and I go, oh shit, yeah, I gotta hit that button. So it's like, that will tell you where I'm at in the kitchen, right? So I feel immense amounts of pressure and I have to, you know, as I'm recording this later on, I gotta go to the grocery store, and before I go to the grocery store, I have to make this meal plan. I gotta come up with a week's worth of dinners that are different and tasty and engaging and all these things that really just, it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure. And I know somebody out there might be going, well, do the meal box things, right? Like that solves your problem. It solves the grocery store shopping and it solves the meal prep shopping. And you're not wrong, but I've done them before and I didn't find them as convenient as I thought I would, I guess. Mostly it was the delivery part of it, was just like making sure somebody was home so that somebody didn't run off with your box of food and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see, we'll figure it out. But all I ask for is, you know, your positive thoughts and vibes to help me get through meal prep and meal planning. I am not good at it. Shifting gears a little bit, if you've listened to the podcast and some of the past episodes, you know I have super, super fond memories of the video store. You know, as I've talked about it a few times on the show, just the great memories I have of going to the video store and how I really did like it more than the streaming thing. I mean, I love the ability to go sit down like right now and watch a shit ton of different movies, but there was something special in my mind about the video store. And so last night we watched the documentary on Netflix, which is very ironic, The Last Blockbuster. And my God, I'll tell you, here's the thing, the documentary, the people that put it together, they did a good job. It does drag in some spots for sure, but my God, the thing almost brought me to tears. Just the memories, like, you know, like of going to the video store. At one point, my family owned a small video store, and that was fun because I was a kid and I got to, you know, be on the cutting edge of when new tapes were coming in. And I used to rent my video games out of that video store. It was back in the day where I lived, there was nowhere to trade a video game. There was no like electronics boutique or EB Games or GameStop or anything like that. And it was, you know, you beat a game and that was it. There was no downloadable content or anything and you had nothing to do with it. So I would rent them out of the video store that we had. It was awesome. It was a great way to make money as a kid. And then the short version of what happened to that video store is we got scammed, basically, as a family. We went away on vacation and when we came back, the video store was gone. everything in it was gone. The video store was gone. We couldn't find the other owner. Like, it was craziness. I lost all my video games as a kid. Like, I wasn't even thinking about my parents and the fact that they just lost a business and an investment. I was just like, where the fuck are my games? It was the biggest concern I had. But watching the last Blockbuster documentary, at times it almost brought me to tears. I was thinking about the people that I used to work with at Blockbuster and the memories I have, some of the silly stuff that we used to do that other people did. You know, you probably think you're the only one that did it, but you know, other people that used to work there talking about hiding in the Dropbox and scaring customers. We did that all the time. It was the best thing. You climbed into the return box. You know, they had the quick drop slots and you sat in there. And then when the thing opened, you would talk or you would grab the movie. One of the two, right? And it would freak the person out on the other side. And it was good, clean, wholesome fun. As long as that person didn't have a heart attack and died. Good, clean, wholesome fun. But, you know, I just had such great, like I say, I worked with amazing people. It's still one of my favorite jobs I've ever had, was working in a video store. And at one point, my wife was watching it with me and she was like, these people are weird. The people that were being interviewed in the documentary, she was like, who really misses going to the video store? And I was just like, I guess I'm weird then. I loved, you know, kind of going to the video store, talking movies, looking at movies. Like, it was just so much fun. And yeah, so watching that documentary was really cool. Like I say, it dragged a little bit. Another part of the documentary that made me feel sad was that they actually had to take time, and I understand why they had to do this, but it made me feel very old. They take time at the beginning of the documentary to basically explain what a video store is. It's like, hey, kids that grew up with streaming services, back in the day, you know, before Fire, you had to jump in your car and actually drive to a physical location and then wander aimlessly up and down the aisles trying to decide what you wanted to rent. And there was a chance what you wanted to rent wasn't even in. You couldn't get it. Even if you went to the stores, you know, you had a good chance it might be there, but no guarantees. Even if you reserved the fucking thing. Sometimes you'd show up and be like, yeah, the people that have it haven't brought it back yet. So, you know, a reservation was upping your chances by 5, just made you feel better. You know, like going to the video store going, oh, is the movie we're going to want going to be there? Yeah, we reserved it. We're good. Didn't mean anything. But it was magical. But they had to take a good 20 minutes at the beginning of this documentary to basically explain what a video store was. And I was sitting there, part of my brain going, I fucking know what a video is. Everybody. And then there was another part of my brain going, no, not everybody knows. And that's really sad. I'm that old now that there was an entire industry that has risen and fallen in my lifetime that now has to be explained to people. You know, it's not like the other things that have really changed, like phones, for example. It's not that hard to explain to somebody, right? Oh, the phone in your hand, it used to be on a cord connected to the wall. Oh, okay. Like, seems weird. You know, somebody young might be, wow, that would be shitty. But it's still the same basic technology, you know, at its core. You make a phone call. The video store was its own thing. You know, the closest you can get to describing it to somebody is a library. And if you try to explain that to kids by going, well, it's like a library, the kids will look at you and go, what the fuck's a library? So there's really nothing like it. Nothing like a video store. And so watching this documentary, these people that are keeping the fire burning, basically, for Blockbuster is in Bend, Oregon. And this pisses me off because with my old job, when I traveled, I actually went to Bend, Oregon, and I didn't fucking know this was there. I would have went to the last Blockbuster. I probably would have cried. And that can sound silly and lame. The documentary almost made me cry. I think walking in and getting that smell that they even talk about in the documentary, that all Blockbusters kind of had a smell. And it's true, they did. And the blue carpet and the yellow walls, I think I would have cried. I definitely would have at least teared up a little bit. No question about it. I would have teared up a little bit. And I'm so mad. And I'm like, do I want to go to Bend, Oregon when we can travel again just to go to the last Blockbuster? Part of me does, but another part of me is like, there's not a whole lot else going on in Bend. It's beautiful. I really liked Bend, Oregon, but I'm just like, it'd be a pricey trip, one coast to another. Maybe I just get my old job back, if that was a possibility. But it's worth a watch. It's if you're nostalgic like myself, and maybe you've worked in a video store, doesn't even have to be Blockbuster, but maybe you worked in a video store, or you just have fond memories of it, the documentary is definitely good for that. It's a little long, it feels long, but it's worth a checkout on Netflix. And they do clear up one of the massive kind of misconceptions in the world that Netflix put Blockbuster out of business, and that kind of wasn't the case. It was, Netflix was part of the equation, but it wasn't like, you know, Netflix came along and just shut down Blockbuster. Because Netflix, when it started, wasn't what Netflix is today. Netflix, when it started, was kind of like a DVD by mail system. And Blockbuster was doing the same thing, except you could just return your DVDs to Blockbuster locations, which was way more convenient than, you know, just shipping them back. Like, you see what happens in the documentary. It's a lot of like corporate mumbo jumbo bullshit, but it's sad. But when you think about it and you think about where they were in the world, it is mind-numbing that that corporation could not pivot fast enough so that Netflix doesn't exist, and instead it's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go home and watch that on Blockbuster. It's amazing that such an iconic brand that people still recognize that logo today didn't survive. It's nuts. So check it out on Netflix. It's called The Last Blockbuster. It is definitely worth a watch. Let's get into the geek news of the week, and we will start in a galaxy far, far away. A couple of Star Wars stories to get us started this week. First off, they dropped the second trailer for the Bad Batch animated show, and it looks good. It looks right in line with the Clone Wars. It looks like, you know, if you enjoyed the Clone Wars animated show, you're going to enjoy the Bad Batch. Interesting characters in the Star Wars universe. I am anxious to check out their adventures more. This trailer kind of gave you maybe a better idea on what the story is going to be. It looks almost like maybe a rescue mission that turns into kind of like an escape mission, the Bad Batch on the run or something like that. It's kind of the vibe I got from the trailer, but animation looks good. Voice acting looks good. It looks like the same quality that we got with the animated Clone Wars, which is top shelf. Like, there's not really much better than that. So looking forward to the Bad Batch. It will drop on Disney Plus on May the 4th. Perfect day to drop that. We also got news that the entire cast of Obi-Wan has been done and they've released it. And then they also said that they're about to start production on the show. Cast looks good. And perhaps the biggest news coming out of the, you know, announcement of the entire cast was that Joel Edgerton and Bonnie Piacy will reprise their roles from the prequel films as Owen Lars and Beru Lars, so Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, two beloved characters from the original trilogy. And it makes sense that they're in this series. I mean, we got to figure Obi-Wan will be watching over Luke at least part of this series, so it makes sense that Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru will be in this. Really, really looking forward to Obi-Wan. Now, one thing that did come out of the casting was that the actor that plays Jar Jar Binks, he went on social media, Ahmed Best, and he said, listen, don't look for me in Obi-Wan. He was like, thanks for the love, but I'm not in the series as much as I'd love to be part of it. And then he just said, you know, he's ecstatic to see what comes of it. But if you were worried that you were going to get some sort of Jar Jar appearance, it appears, unless he's lying to us, that we are Jar Jar free from in the Obi-Wan series. So there you go. kind of sticking with Star Wars, but sliding into the world of Marvel a little bit as well. Daisy Ridley has been doing some press recently for Chaos Walking, and somebody asked her about the rumors that she's going to be involved in the upcoming Spider-Woman film. And her comment was basically no. She said, you know, she had made the comment that being part of something like Spider-Woman would be amazing, and people took that as her tipping her hand and saying that she was going to be involved. But she said, you know, as of right now, she's not, but did not close the door on it. You know, even though she has been part of one giant franchise, that doesn't mean that she wouldn't be open to being part of another one. She basically said that the things that Marvel are doing, she are phenomenal. She just got finished watching WandaVision and thought that was really cool. So she'd be open to it. It's just, at least coming from her right now, she is not part of the Spider-Woman film. And sticking with Marvel, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, I think, when we were talking about Marvel shift in release dates and how close Shang-Chi was to Venom 2 Let There Be Carnage. And, you know, it was 2 weeks between Shang-Chi and Venom. Now Sony has announced that the Venom sequel, they're going to push it back a week. So it'll be September 24th. So it gives it a little bit more space. But it's still not free of competition in that release date, because it will now be going up against The Many Saints of the Sopranos prequel movie, a Mark Wahlberg film Infinite, and another movie called Dear Evan Hansen. So there's going to be some competition for Venom that week, mostly from the Sopranos prequel. I'm actually curious to see how this plays out, because Venom is a beloved character, but that first Venom movie didn't have the greatest reception. So will people flock to see a sequel with Venom, or will they be running to see the Sopranos movie, especially still with Shang-Chi only, you know, 3 weeks before Venom? Will there be a little bit like, well, I just saw a Marvel movie, I'm going to go see the Sopranos movie, then I'll go see Venom? I'll be curious to see how that box office plays out. Switching over to DC, they've got some TV news. Even though they're already shooting the season and the season's on the air, The Flash continues to add cast members. They have cast Bart Allen coming up for season 7, and Jordan Fisher has been cast as Bart Allen. Obviously, the future son of Barry Allen and Iris West Allen. You know, he's the fastest teenager on the planet, but he's a little impulsive, so I'll be curious to see how Bart Allen is going to fit in to the show. But a nice addition to the Flash show, nonetheless. I love that the Flash show is kind of leaving no stone unturned in kind of the Flash family and the Flash mythos. They're definitely digging into every corner that they possibly can, which I really enjoy. We got a massive release date announcement. It looked like it pretty much took over Times Square, but The Rock has announced when Black Adam is going to be hitting theaters, and that is July 29th, 2022, which, if you are, you know, kind of sitting there thinking, well, wait a minute, doesn't DC already have some movies coming out in 2022? They do, and if everything stays, you know, nothing changes release date, which I could still see one of them doing, they're going to have 4 movies in 2022, which is a lot of films. That's a lot of movies in 1 year. Not saying that they can't do it, not saying that there's not space for all that, but I definitely think it's a lot. So hopefully they can pull it off. I know fans are pretty excited about the fact that potentially we could have 4 DC movies in 1 year. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see if everything holds those dates. Things seem to be moving around so much. But if you want a quick rundown of the 2022 DC slate, you're basically looking at The Batman on March 4th, Black Adam on July 29th, The Flash on November 4th, and Aquaman 2 on December 16th. So it's a pretty full slate in 2022 for DC Comics. And speaking of DC Comics, there's a couple of trending things happening. Of course, Birds of Prey came out last year. Had a decent reception. I really enjoyed it. Black Canary has been trending on Twitter, and that's because fans are really trying to show support for a potential HBO or HBO Max spinoff series of the Birds of Prey, which I think would be a perfect place to continue their story. You know, the cast was great. Loved, you know, the Birds of Prey in the movie, and I would love to see HBO Max run with this as a TV show. It would be fantastic. I don't know why they wouldn't do it. If the cast is open to doing it, you know, obviously minus Harley, but you just do the Birds of Prey, I think it would work out really, really well. And the other thing that DC had trending over the last week was, of course, the Suicide Squad, as we got the Suicide Squad trailer, the official trailer for the Suicide Squad, which comes out in August. And I watched it, and a giant, giant, giant smile on my face through the entire thing. And, you know, it was just one of those things of, it's silly, like the banter. There was a lot of talk in the trailer, I will say that. But the banter was fun, it was quippy. Some of it was written almost like sitcom level of like, how quick the jokes were coming. I don't know if that was just editing, but that's definitely how it came across in the trailer. But the action looks good. It looks bloody. It looks violent. They did not shy away from the R rating in the trailer, mostly for language, which I'm not, believe me, I'm not complaining. I think if you were a villain sent on a suicide mission, you'd be swearing a lot too. So I think it definitely fits the characters. And, you know, definitely there was some James Gunn humor in there. I think the biggest thing I took away from the trailer, outside of one of the big reveals, which I'll get to in a second, was it does have a different tone than Guardians of the Galaxy. If I did have a fear with James Gunn coming in to do this movie, was that, is he just going to make it like a DC Guardians of the Galaxy? You know, is he going to have that vibe? And while it is still funny and silly, which obviously is one of the hallmarks of the Guardians series, it definitely had a different vibe. And I don't know if it was that DC let him go to the R rating, so just things seemed more adult, or just the characters. You know, like they're kind of darker characters, which led him to a bit of a darker tone with more cynical humor. But there's definitely a difference between Guardians of the Galaxy and the Suicide Squad. And we did get to see the big bad in the trailer, which they kind of already let out that it was Starro, this giant space starfish that can control people's minds with little baby starfishes. But we got to see Starro in the trailer, which I thought was pretty sweet. I figured they might have held that off until like a second trailer, but we got to see it right away. So fantastic. I love Starro, looked good. The whole movie looked good. I'm anxious for August when we get to see the entire Suicide Squad in action. And my only thing, again, it's my little worry about James Gunn. He likes to do silly, and he does it well, but don't end the Suicide Squad with a dance-off like he did with Guardians of the Galaxy. Please. If that is the ending right now, go back in, reshoot, re-edit, recut. Just no dance-off to end the movie. Please. The one last thing I want to hit on before I bail this week is the hashtag Restore the Snyderverse. Of course, you know, Zack Snyder's Justice League continues to do very, very well on HBO Max and around the world on streaming platforms. And so a lot of people want to restore the Snyderverse. Subway sandwiches, you know, the Subway, the sandwich chain, they tweeted Restore the Snyderverse. A lot of the actors would love to continue the story that they were telling. And I'm all for that. I've said on here many times, I'm a fan of what Zack Snyder has done. There are some decisions he made that I wouldn't make, and there are some things in his Snyderverse going forward that I would like him to change if he could, or, you know, it is what it is, but just not choices I would make. My only thing is that I've noticed a bit of, and it's not many, I don't want to make it sound like it's the majority of the, you know, initially the release the Snyder Cut movement, which is now kind of turned into the Restore the Snyderverse movement, but there's some of them out there that are just being toxic, and not in a way of like just toxic about Warner Brothers or about HBO or about DC. They're being toxic towards other films like Kong and Godzilla, Kong versus Godzilla, which is out now. There are ones people review bombing it giving it one star with just a hashtag restore the Snyderverse as the you know, critique of the film. That's not, even if those people are, and I, listen, my statement on those people, I tweeted this out, those people are not fans. Those people are not fans of Zack Snyder's work. Those people are not fans of DC Comics. Those people are not fans of movies. Those people are just idiots. But if they are fans, if there's the odd one of them that's like, this is going to help get, you know, the Zack Snyder's universe back. It's not. I'll tell you that right now. Shitting on other Warner Brothers and DC properties and maybe potentially affecting how they do financially is not the way that you're going to get the Snyderverse back. You know, Warner Brothers pumped a shit ton of money into Kong versus Godzilla. If it does not make a shit ton of money, then they do not have a shit ton of money to put back into more superhero movies. Same with the Suicide Squad. There are people on the Suicide Squad trailer like, this is shit. Restore the Snyderverse. Okay. Even though Zack Snyder's listed as a producer on the Suicide Squad. Again, you know, these movies have to come out, stand on their own merit. Hey, champion what you want to champion. If you want to restore the Snyderverse, maybe you don't. Maybe you watch Zack Snyder's Justice League and you're like, I liked it, but let's move on. That's cool too. Everybody's opinion is kind of valid, but there's no benefit to just shitting on other pieces of work to attempt to get what you hopefully want. Because I'll tell you right now, that ain't going to work. Constructive cases, keeping the hashtag trending, just talking about how great Zack Snyder's Justice League is and how great the characters are and how great the actors are in those roles. You know, Henry Cavill, born to play Superman. Ben Affleck, the best Batman out there. Those types of things, that's what's going to get the attention in a positive way. Not just sitting there going, oh, Kong versus Godzilla, one star, restore the Snyderverse. That's not going to work. That's not going to get you where you want to be. So if you are one of those people and you are a true fan, stop being a, you know, keyboard tough guy and just pause for a second and think, are your actions really going to get you any closer to the end goal? Because I'll tell you right now, the executives that see that shit, that's just going to piss them off. And even if they, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm a bit more vindictive, but I just know, like, if I was an executive and I was sitting there going, you know what, maybe we can restore the Snyderverse. Maybe we can talk to Zach, see if we can work something out, maybe do stuff on HBO Max or whatever. And then I see, oh, look at our overall ratings and reviews for Kong versus Godzilla. And unfortunately, reviews do affect box office. You'll sit there and you look and you go, oh, it's because of all these people. Well, fuck them then. Don't call. You know, we now have to clean up this mess. So just think when you're with your hashtag and keep the hashtag going. Now, listen, I'm not anti-Snyderverse. I'm just anti being stupid and affecting other people's hard works for, you know, there's room for it all is what I'm saying, especially as Warner Brothers and DC spins into the multiverse. There's room for everything. So we don't have to forsake one to have the other. And that'll do it for this week. I feel like I ended with like Springer's final thoughts from the Jerry Springer Show. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. Of course, don't forget to follow us on all the social media channels at Scotty Myers on Twitter, The Scotty Myers Show, Facebook, and Instagram. Head on over to ScottyMyersMedia.com if you need to shoot me an email. And keep telling your friends about the show. I love seeing it spread the way it is, and I can't thank you enough for that. So until we chat again, have a great week.